Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I am super happy to be here, as always, because it never fails. I get to hang out with really cool people. And today, those cool people are Tom and Ian. So, hi to both of you. Tom, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks. I have next to me a 27-inch Dell monitor, and tomorrow I get a Dell desktop. My brother, who lives up in the state of Washington, his hard drive crashed, and his computer is like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs a new one, and I need to go up and visit him. So I'm having the computer delivered here. Give me 3 or 4 days to get it set up, and then I'm going to drive it up there. So.
Nice.
It's prime IT service within the family.
Nice. And this is so America. So you live in the southern half of California.
No, yeah, Northern California.
And wait, I thought you were around San Diego.
No, I'm near San Francisco.
Oh,
Silicon Valley, man. Come on.
It's, I don't know what. Oh, I know why.
I'm not Adam Christensen.
You live with Adam. Yeah. Yeah. And Adam doesn't even live there anymore.
Well, yeah. To drive to San Diego would be about a 10-hour drive for me.
Right. Okay. Well, still, even going from the Bay Area up to Washington, I mean, that's
12 hours.
That's 12 hours. And here in the United States, it's like, okay, so I'm just going to do the 12-hour drive and go there, and it's cool. And in the UK, you're like, are you brain damaged?
Pretty much, yes, exactly that. I would ask that same question. Why do you want to drive for 12 hours?
The calculation is my brother and sister live out on the coast of Washington, so if I flew, I'd have to fly to Seattle. And then it's another 3-hour drive from Seattle.
And you'd have to fly with his computer.
Right. I couldn't That's bring his computer.
But surely what couriers are for?
Well, but I need, yeah. You know, if you do the math, you go to the airport, you go an hour or two early, you fly for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Then you wait for your baggage, you wait for your rent a car, you get in the car, and then you're in Seattle traffic. So instead of 3 hours, it takes you 4 hours. It's almost faster to drive. Almost, because they live so far outside the city.
There are places where I actually run the numbers to figure out should I fly or drive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I need to go to LA, it's kind of half a one, you know,
mm-hmm.
versus the other, because by the time you fly and get out of LAX or Orange County Airport or something, it's almost faster to drive.
Yeah. Yes. There are times of day here where if I needed to go to, say, Colorado Springs, it's actually faster and potentially will cost me less to do the 45-minute drive out to Denver International Airport, get on a plane, fly to Colorado Springs.
Colorado Springs.
Where if they felt like it, they could just leave the landing gear down the whole time. Because basically you get on the plane, it goes
take off and you land. Yeah.
And
yeah,
you go down.
It's an up and a down. Yeah. It's an up and a down flight. It's like when I go to Dublin, that's an up and a down flight.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a body of water between me, so it's at least sensible. But it is a flight which pretty much just goes like that and down again. Well, like that and down again. You know, it's one of those.
If you follow the Elon Musk jet accounts, you'll see occasionally his jet will fly from San Jose to Oakland, which is about a 40-minute drive.
Yeah, which is absolutely insane.
It is.
It's complete madness.
Now, if it's during rush hour and you're already at the airport, that's actually faster.
It's definitely faster.
Yeah. Yes. So depends on the objective, but sometimes it's faster to drive from here to Albuquerque, other times to fly. By the way, the Albuquerque Sunport is my favorite airport ever.
Oh, I've never been there.
It's small and it's happy.
Yeah, not too much happiness at airports anymore.
Yeah, no, they're a place of misery and
despair. But it's a Sunport, I mean, and they make a point, like if you say, "Oh, I'm at your airport," they say, "No, you're at our sunport."
Sunport.
They do not call it an airport. It is a sunport.
Wow. Wow, that's wild.
Yep. It's a wonderful little airport, sunport. It's a wonderful little place to embark and disembark from a flight. Yep. So a little bit longer for us to get to, and actually does require a flight. Ian, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Speaking of flights, last week I was on an air. I was in another country, on in the Eastern Europe even. So yeah, no, I'm back again. I've been in Bucharest over the previous last week. Before that, I was doing a talk, so I wasn't available then. But yeah, no, I'm back again. Really good to have a team meet with all my colleagues and stuff, and have a and chance to. We are all remotely sort of set up, so it's nice that. Twice, three times a year, we come together and actually sit in a room together and debate and chat and catch up. So, but I've had a really hideous flight time coming home.
Oh, that sucks.
It
Mundane
was,
flights are the best. That's what you always want.
yeah, it was just the time was 7 a.m. Bucharest time, which is 2 hours ahead of me here.
Ouch.
So getting to the airport, sort of like 1 my time in my head, even though it's 3 there. Or four there, whatever it was. And then finding on our flight was a dear little child of about 2 years old to discover all the kind of high-pitched noises she could make with her voice and was having real good fun trying to make every possible one she could. So my hope of getting 40
Your
winks on the way
science.
home was killed, but I slept like a log when I arrived home.
My assumption is I never sleep on any flight. So if it happens, that's a
The
pleasant
bonus.
surprise. And well, actually, I try and not sleep on flights anyhow because I really need to use my APAP machine. So yeah, but Ian, I just realized it takes less time for you to fly to various countries around you than it does for me to fly to other states.
Yeah, that Bucharest is a 3.5 hours, 4 hours.
Okay,
And
so for
winds are in the right direction. You can get a bit of a giddy up, and it goes a bit quicker. But generally, it's around that.
me to
I
fly
can.
to Miami is about a 4.5 hour flight.
That
It
would take me all day to get
reminds
to
me.
Miami.
It
Yeah, it
reminds
would.
me of when we were on our honeymoon, and we were planning the journey of and sort of stuff we were going to do. We came to New York. And I said, I know what. Let's go to Niagara. I've been to Niagara once before. It was fantastic. Let's go to Niagara. We can drive up there. Surely it won't take very long.
Oh, bless
Oh, little
you.
European brain. And then I looked at the maps and went, oh, all right. So that'll be flying into Buffalo then. And then another hour or two's driving. Yeah. Okay. That's what we did. But yes, it's madness. I mean, I've done long road trips in the States, and I want to do another one again. I've driven from LA to San Francisco at the PCH, and I'd like to do the rest of the PCH.
Oh, that's so cute how you called that a long road trip.
That is a long road trip
I mean,
to
it's a
normal
road
rational
trip.
humans. It is a long road trip.
It is a road trip. Yes.
Yeah,
Highway
to
one.
rational
Highway one
humans.
is it's the best road trip in America. Highway one.
Highway one is a beautiful
Highway one
road
was
trip.
amazing. In a Mustang with the roof
Out
down.
with the top down.
Yeah, what else was I going to do?
Yeah, I have done that and it's wonderful.
Yeah, shame the Mustang wasn't the best model in the world, so it was a bit of a yeah. But there we
Yeah,
go.
it's not a great
But the
car.
experience,
Point
you know,
is,
going
you were
fast
in a
enough to get properly
convertible on
alive
the
again.
one.
I was on the one.
Did you have the Beach Boys playing?
I might have done at some point. We did have so I did actually know one thing I did play was Boys of Summer.
There you go.
Oh, yep, that's
That's a good
appropriate
one.
too. Because that's a yeah. I didn't have my Wayfarers on, but it was close, you know. But you know, it's that kind of sound, and you want that wafting through the States and driving through sort of tunnels where I could then make the engine make silly noises and all that kind of thing, which is entertaining. But I'd like to then
You
go
want
up through the
another?
forests and make my way up to Seattle next.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great drive too.
Doing that coastal drive up into the wine country and through the redwood forest and
Redwoods, yeah.
yeah, that's really nice. Yep.
That will be some holiday at some point or another, and I'll probably do it the same way I did that, which is literally took my iPad. I mean, I was at the time, it was, I mean, it was, this was 10 years ago now, 12 years ago now. I literally took my iPad with me, and I'd booked my initial hotel for when we got off the aeroplane. And then I thought, how far are we going to go tomorrow? Me and my dad looked at each other, yeah, about there. Yeah, all right then. So we booked our next hotel, which was in it was Malibu or somewhere. Booked our next hotel, drove, looked at whatever we wanted to see, drove on, saw this bit, drove on, saw the next bit, booked a hotel as we just went across. It was really great.
Okay, here's another great one for you. And it will be a completely different experience because it's totally different ecosystem the whole way through. I-70 between Salt Lake and Denver,
Yeah.
you will see things that that are just natural land formations where you look at them and think, nope, I'm in Disneyland and someone crafted this.
You're in Flintstones land, yeah.
Right.
Oh no, I would like to, if I get a chance, I would like to see all those kind of the ones that look like the things you see in the Wile E. Coyote cartoons that fall on
Yeah,
top, that he tries to form it
kind
fall
of,
on
yeah.
top of the kind of, I've got some images that are ones that turn up in Windows wallpapers on, with the striated rock, which is all different colours. I mean, that looks wonderful. I don't, I'm sure that's somewhere, that kind of part of the world. And different sort of reds and yellow, reds and creams and whatever going up the things, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's Eastern Utah, Western Colorado. But
Yeah.
the most striking of those stone kind of pillars like that, where you get the sedimentary layers and then all the erosions, you can see the different lines and it's the fun shapes. You'll have more of that in Utah. And yeah,
Yeah,
it's
no, I need to
awesome.
see these
Welcome to
things.
Tour Across America, everybody.
Right. Isn't this just a fantastic podcast? Yeah. Oh my God, we're doing a podcast.
Oh,
All
yeah.
right. So I guess we should pretend like we're doing the big show.
Yeah.
So I should also go and look at the live chat and see that Ian has the first story. All right. Tell us about your story, Ian.
My story involves two things that I like and I'm interested in: AI and beer. I couldn't resist it when I saw this, but it appears that there's been some research in Belgium, of all places. I mean, those guys are craftsmen in the world of beer. And they've been taking reviews and they've been taking data and they're using AI to try and calculate exactly this optimum beer for the perfect pint, supposedly. I don't think that exists really, because all our taste buds are different. But the idea that the AI model predicts the chemical changes that could optimize a beer. So it's, again, interesting use of AI that's helping the big maths, essentially, of chunking down a huge data set of 180,000 reviews, a tasting pan of 250 beers with 50 different attributes, shoving them all into a big mashing machine, and let the AI process that and let that and you get that out. That's just, that kind of stuff is really interesting, and where AI feels to me like it's being used in a manner that I'm interested in, and I think that's cool. You know, you can see the medical application as well, where it's interesting, but yet another way of not trying to take over the world or become a replacement for a news reporter. It's making use of all this massive computing power to do something useful. Make me nice tasting beer.
Now brewmasters are going to have to be prompt engineers.
Yes.
Right.
So let me get this straight. So we can use AI to come up with chemicals to create medicines that save people's lives.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. The beer one is more important.
The beer one is
Well,
more.
obviously.
You know,
well,
it
what else
was.
would be? But it's taken the right beer plant, it's taken just a ton of data sets
Right.
and chunked
The
that
perfect application.
and predicted how something would taste. I mean, you can make it save people's lives, or you can make it save my sanity once in a while by making me a very nice tasting beer.
That's saving your life too.
I can find no fault with this, but it just seems like. Also, on a semi-serious note, it shows how AI is starting to take hold in industry and making really intelligent and interesting use of it to take a big data set and make it easier to process and to get more information out of it easily than would have been possible previously. And that's interesting and good on the sensible side of I'm going to get a tastier beer out of this in the end. It also, but you know, it's just that whole thing of being able to take a very complex data set and be able to learn and work out what the. It's also because the things to do with the beer, for the beer example, and it probably applies to medicines as well, it's the proportions of the different chemicals present in the beer makes it taste the way it tastes. So the idea of this is they can find out the minute quantity of we add a little bit more of that and a little bit less of this hop, and we leave it brewing for X amount more. We're going to get the, you know, we're going to hit this flavor point, or we're going to hit this particular taste that's very popular. That seems interesting and great.
Oh, yeah, it does. And, you know, I think it was, well, it's been no more than 5 years ago where I was at a conference, and even then, AI was a big talking point for all the different software products, and IBM was there, and they were showing off an AI-driven robot that poured beer. And so it would give you the perfect pour each time.
Course, yeah.
And it, I mean, it was cool to watch, and luckily they had quality beer and not like Coors or American Budweiser or you know one of those, but like a really good craft brew, and it was great to see what they were doing with that. And here we are, no more than 5 years later, and now we've got AI brewmasters.
Yes, that's wild. When about 20 years ago, I was in an airline lounge in Tokyo, and Japanese love all the everything to be perfect, of course. And so they had a beer dispenser where you'd get a, a schooner, a tall glass. You put it in the machine. You push the button, the machine would tilt the glass backwards, and then the beer would pour out, and it would tilt it so that it wouldn't foam up.
So
And
you
then when
get
it was
perfect.
finished, it would tilt it back up and you'd grab your glass of beer. It was a lot of engineering for not so much
Have
back.
you ever worked behind the bar of a pub, Tom, and done the whole pouring of beer?
My
There,
dad
there's an
used to own a
art and a
bar, yeah.
skill to getting
Absolutely.
the angle correct and to set it right. And if you're working with, I presume you've seen the hand pull pumps in the UK, the ones with a big handle. That takes a little bit of skill and a practice. Many eons ago, when there was no grey hair and all that kind of thing, when I used to work in a pub, that first pull would be the one that set up the pint to make sure you then manage to get the head to just sit just right to get the perfect amount of beer to get no gruff old Yorkshireman complaining he didn't order half a pint when you give him his glass, which for a
Back when
20-year-old
Ian
kid
was a
was
wee pup.
important.
Yeah, very important. That's a very important point.
Oh my
Never
God.
stand between a man and a good beer pour.
Yeah,
That's right.
exactly. So you learn fast.
So when I was reading this article, the first thing I thought of when I saw that professor's name was, what is Max Verstappen doing with AI driven Verstappen from Leuven?
Verstappen.
Leave it to the Dutch.
Absolutely.
All right, that's awesome. And now, okay, there's a little brewery that's just a few minutes from my place. I absolutely love it, and I've probably mentioned it before, Grossenbart, and it's one of those little places where you can go in and actually sit at the bar, and you talk with the owner as he pulls you a beer. And the master brewer will be sitting there writing notes and stuff about whatever he's coming up with next. And they'll do
Sounds
things like,
wonderful.
hey, we're experimenting. So we're thinking about taking this recipe, and so they'll pour a beer and set it in front of me. But here's what we're thinking of doing with it. And like last time it was, we want to make a peppery beer. So they had these chili pepper flakes, and they were adding flakes to the beer. And then we're all trying just these little sampler size glasses with different amounts of beer. And I sat there for part of an afternoon.
You got hammered. Lots of little glasses of beer add up, and
luckily the food truck showed up, so we were fine.
Oh, good. There you go. So how did beer with pepper taste?
It's a lot of fun, and I've had peppered beers like that before. And actually, now that we're saying this, I think that the recipe they came up with from that day is about to go on tap. So today is what, Thursday? So it might have gone this week, or it might be next week, but I definitely need to go in and see how that one turned out.
Maybe we need a big show remote recording.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we can make that happen. I have the technology. And they have Wi-Fi, so.
Perfect.
I have the gear. We could live stream me tasting the beer.
Okay, I'll get in the car and drive.
Excellent. Excellent. Do the math.
And I will look jealously on from afar.
Well, it'll almost be like you're there. All right. So now I want beer. Tom, tell me about your story.
Let's get this done quickly so we can all get a beer.
Right.
My story is about Qualcomm, Intel, and Google getting together to try to compete with NVIDIA. And if
Oh boy.
If you've read your technology news feed over the last 2 weeks, you probably saw 4,032 articles about NVIDIA GTC.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think used to stand for, was it graphics or gaming technology conference originally? Anyway.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
It was like a rock show. They held it at the SAP Arena in San Jose, which is where the NHL team San Jose Sharks play, and it holds 17,500 people for a semiconductor company user conference. It was amazing. It was kind of a rock show. Anyway, so clearly and NVIDIA is riding very high, of course, because they're at the sort of the foundation of all this AI stuff that we're talking about. Probably the brewmasters in Belgium are running their training on NVIDIA GPUs on some compute farm somewhere. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, they're far and away the leader in terms of supplying the chips, you know, the GPUs that are used for training and inference and everything. But a big part of their advantage is their software, and it's called CUDA. And I have no idea what CUDA means. It's been around so long, I don't know what it means. But it's basically their software system for programming GPUs for any purpose. Programming GPUs that are massively parallel is very difficult. I wish Patrice was here to explain how difficult that would be without the help of CUDA. But when you have, you know, thousands of cores and you can fire off split up your software to run on each of the cores and then bring everything back is quite a trick. So CUDA is a huge competitive advantage for NVIDIA, and they've been working on it for at least 20, 25 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. I just looked it up. Compute Unified Device Architecture. No wonder you can't remember it, because CUDA sounds way better.
How could I forget? How could I forget?
Right?
And I worked at companies that ported software to CUDA with non-AI applications to great success. In fact, one of them was actually announced at GTC on the stage. So it's great for massively parallel jobs. But people like Qualcomm, Intel, and Google are probably feeling a little bit left out. So this cooperation is to try to use Intel's One API one API, which is the software library basically that they put together to support Intel GPUs. And I'm not sure anybody who uses one API, I haven't heard about it since they announced it a couple of years ago. But you know, there's Google who's got compute farms and Tensor processors and Intel with GPUs, and Qualcomm is making GPUs now too. This struck me as sort of a desperate attempt to try to keep up and not become irrelevant, but I think, you know, we're headed down a path where we're going to have not an 800-pound gorilla in AI compute with NVIDIA. They're going to be an 8 million-pound gorilla in AI compute. And I don't see anything in the way to disrupt that in the short term.
I'm with you on that. NVIDIA has a big head start, and they have a lot of momentum, and they are not showing any signs of slowing down. And Intel has been having trouble for a while now making chips that can compete on this level.
It's fascinating that, in, for me, one of the things I find fascinating from some of this is that our what was chips designed around making little gaming sprites jump around a screen faster and more fluidly, the technology has now been turned into just, because basically what that was doing lots of really complicated calculations, is now being used and harnessed to do lots of really complicated calculations and stuff. That's just that, for a completely different reason, not to make your Call of Duty characters jump up and down and then go and shoot somebody, but to actually think about things and create me a really tasty beer. But you know, it's
the scale is just mind blowing what you can do. You know, obviously the challenge is the having a you know, a moat of CUDA and a software library that everybody programs to is going to be very, very difficult to dislodge. There's lots of companies that are creating the silicon chips, you know, GPUs that plus or minus may be competitive with NVIDIA. But, you know, it's like trying to come up with another desktop OS or mobile phone OS and try to get that going. It's kind of at that level. Maybe there'll be some movement in the market because people are so afraid of NVIDIA getting powerful that they'll support this effort. But I think they have a long road to hoe.
I think you're right. They have a long road to hoe. Wow, that was hard to say. But at the same time, I really want to see companies do this because we need to have that competition. And if NVIDIA is the only name in this game, while in the short term, it's great for all the companies that need that application. But in the long run, having that competition so we have alternatives and we see the technology being driven forward, that's really important.
Yeah, I would expect, you know, maybe AMD's effort, since AMD is much stronger in GPUs than Intel is, or Google or somebody, maybe they can take a run at it.
I could see that. Yeah. And companies that are doing all of their own custom work, I could see where they could compete, although not on the same scale. Like, for example, Apple. They can do some incredible things, but it's not like they're going to be competing directly with NVIDIA in this space.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think somebody like Apple for iPhones or Macs, since they control the processor and all the software, could do some interesting things. Maybe Google with Tensor and the Pixel phones. But, you know, we know how Google's history with hardware and software.
Right.
Apple is probably a better example. You're right.
Yeah. So, well, I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out, because we're going to see some really cool stuff, and we're going to see people really pushing the technology. And
Ian pointed out, you know, AI is cool, but the application is cooler. So using AI
exactly
to create beer brewing recipes is much more interesting than understanding how many parameters are in your LLM, you know.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yep. Wow. You know, how about if I throw in a story just to kind of mix it up, because I
Yeah.
rarely need to.
That's about time you throw in a story,
Yeah,
Jeff.
we
Right.
haven't had a story from you for
I should be
ages.
pulling my weight every now and then.
Yeah.
Once a quarter.
Once a quarter. All right, so here's my story. Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced this morning to 25 years in prison. Boom.
Poor Sam.
Poor Sam. He does say he made some mistakes, some big and some
Yeah,
small.
you could say
One of the
that.
big ones was getting caught.
Yeah,
That was
basically.
most of his mistake, I believe.
Yeah. And his attorneys are saying that this is not an appropriate
25
sentence.
years. Of course they
And
are.
of course they are. And so they're going to appeal the ruling and the sentence, because of course they are. And honestly, if they didn't, they wouldn't be doing their jobs. Yeah, so here's the guy that was just siphoning off whatever he wanted from FTX, and screwed over a lot of people, ruined a lot of lives, and he did the F around part. Now he gets to find out.
Yeah, he
Yeah, I don't know
gets.
if you saw any of the victim statements that have been made in the last couple of days. Some of them are kind of hilarious because people are so stupid, but some of them are extremely sad that just lost everything they owned.
Yeah. And yeah, some of those people are saying, yeah, I've been suicidal since this,
Right.
and my family's totally destroyed, and I wasn't trying to use them to make money. They were just the wallet holder for me. And yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, just ruined people's lives. And I'm not a neurologist or a psychologist, but the problem with SBF, and even his parents seem to be a little bit this way, that they just have, they miss that part of their brain that has empathy.
Yeah, I agree. And it's from what I've read, it came across like he actually didn't have remorse for what he did.
Right.
He's just disappointed that he's
You're
having
cool.
to pay a penalty for his actions.
Right. Right. I would imagine if you talked to him, you wouldn't understand what the big fuss is about. He doesn't get it.
No, he doesn't get it. And his attorneys are saying, look, it's not like anyone is really harmed by any of this,
Right.
which is kind of ballsy to say that.
Yeah. Clear, total lack of empathy. I mean, like you said, the lawyers do what lawyers are paid to do. And that doesn't really surprise me. But even some of the comments that his mother and father have made have really, made me scratch my head.
Yeah, it feels like his family has a pattern here, and I'm not saying, wow, these are all really bad people,
Right.
but it feels like there is some sort of disconnect that his family has in general.
So now the question is, who's next? Who's going to be the next SBF? I'm sure there are other cryptocurrency people like SBF that are out there.
There have to be.
It's all of
And
them, isn't it? Just about. They're all crooked.
yeah, basically all of them. Yeah. But the question is, which is the next one that'll get prosecuted?
Right. And my guess is that all of these people have been watching very closely what's been going on with this case, so they can refine their processes to decrease the likelihood that they have to suffer similar consequences.
Yeah, that's a good point. Learn from the stupid criminal so you don't get caught.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Bad business. But you know what's good business? TSO hosts. Yep. And
That's a good one.
Well, thank you. So what makes TSO Host good business? Well, the fact that they offer solid and reliable web hosting, that they offer great customer support, that they make it easy for you to buy the domain names that you want, and they offer great pricing for everything as well. And what they're doing is taking all of that and using it so that we can be here. So they're taking the resources that they manage so well and then providing those to us at the British Tech Network so that we can bring you shows live every single week and have a place for our website and have a place so that all the show files can live somewhere so that you can watch or listen whenever you want. The resources it takes to do live streams and all of the things that we're doing to bring BTN together and make it work for you, it's beyond the level of resources we would be able to pull together on our own. So TSO Host is very generously giving us those resources so that we can do what we do. So they give us the bandwidth to live stream every single week. They give us the hosting, so there's a place for the website to live, and they give us the server space to hold all of the show files so you can watch or listen whenever you want. And seriously, thank you, TSO Host, for being so generous and providing us with all of those services. And please, all of you, hop out on social media and thank TSO Host for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. It's a small thing to do, but it has a huge benefit because it lets TSO Host know that we all really appreciate that they're giving something back to the community and helping all of us be here so we can have our BTN family. Now, let's say, though, that you have found a really great domain name, like ianpullsabeer.com, and you're ready to buy that. Go over to TSO Hosts and use their services to buy the domain name because they make it easy to do. They're going to give you a good price. Just get that in the cart. And if you decide, you know, I love that domain name so much that I think I need to put a website together where I have all the fanfic photo or drawings that people are making of Ian pulling beer, and there's a place for all of those to live. And so, yeah, throw a web hosting package in, get your domain name in there, get all of that in your cart, then add the discount code BTN20 and get 20% off your order. So they're taking a great deal and making it even better by offering you a 20% discount. So thank you, TSO Host, for being here and supporting us. And speaking of support, this is where I would typically turn to Patrice and say, hey, Patrice, can you tell people about the live chat? And then she would say something like, of course, I'd be happy to. And then she would go on some just really professional, slick-sounding monologue about how we have a live chat that you can participate in, and you can see the links for everything that we're talking about and the cool stuff that we're about to talk about, and you can interact with us in real time, and it's really great, and you should do that. So to do that, oh my God, you have to know a website. You have to know a URL that Patrice is really good at knowing. And it's chat.britishtechnetwork.com.
Yeah.
Live chat.
That's what it is. Yeah. Chat.britishtechnetwork.com. That's where I'm logged in now.
So go there and you can log in and then you can interact with us in real time and see all the links. And it's really cool because we're there right now. Okay, so then the next thing that Patrice would talk about is how some of you don't watch live, which is okay because we have the recordings, so you can watch or listen at your leisure. But what if you want to see all the links and the conversation from the show? There's a way to do that too. And for that, you go to, it's the other end. So instead of starting with chat, it ends with chat. So that would be britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
You got it.
He's scoring.
I am on fire today. much like the plains and mountains in the United States will be in just a few weeks. Okay, so anyhow, go there. And then Patrice has made this really cool looking calendar. And click on the day for the show. So for today, that would be March 28th, 2024. And when you click on that, then you can find the show and then you can see all the stuff. And as I recall, Patrice has said that you can see all of these chat recordings, transcripts, if you will, going back to 2015. So all of the stupid things that I've been saying since 2015, it typed into the chat, it's all there. For posterity, for whatever that's worth. Okay, so did I explain it all? Did I get through all of it?
I think so.
All right, and that's where Patrice would wrap up very eloquently, and instead, I just start asking people, did I do it? Did I get through it? Yeah, all right. This is one of the many reasons why I do appreciate everything Patrice does to keep all of the technology for the British Tech Network running. Wow. Okay. So now let's do some cool things where I will probably be less of a bumbling fool, but maybe not much. So Tom, it looks like you have the first cool thing.
Okay. My cool thing is a YouTube channel. And I may have talked about this comedian before, but,
you and I,
we all need some
have
comedy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You and I have talked about him. His name is Don McMillan. His, I think his website is technicallyfunny.com. He's a former engineer, former work colleague of mine. He was a chip designer, and he's been doing comedy for 30 or 35 years now.
Wow.
And he's kind of famous. You know, you've seen him, at least in the US, you've seen him on TV and so on. But he has a great series of YouTube videos. So if you're listening to this show and you're kind of geeky or nerdy, go to Don's YouTube channel and click on two or three. They're mostly short clips. They're usually a minute or less. He's got some great bits about how to use statistics, you know, the problem with geeks and relationships, PowerPoint stuff that'll just have you falling on the ground laughing, rolling on the ground laughing. So Don McMillan, Technically Funny, it's YouTube at Don McMillan Comedy.
He is super funny. And who would have thought someone could take a PowerPoint presentation and turn it into a stand-up comedy routine and have it work?
Right, right. If you ever go see him, he always has a projector and a computer, and he does most of his gigs are all driven by PowerPoint. It's pretty funny.
He's super funny. Yep. Awesome. Okay. Well, top that, Ian.
I'll try with a British interviewer slash documentarist guy called Louis Theroux. You may have seen him in the States. He kind of looks a bit like me, people tell me. But he does these really wacky off-the-wall interviews with folk. He's talked to various people in things like the sex industry. And he has this innocent naivety about the way he interviews folk that's really interesting. And he's just done a recently sort of view of interviewing famous folk. The one interesting to us as techie people is Chelsea Manning, given around the time with Assange being sort of potentially extradited and everything else. There's an interview with her, and that's fascinating. That was really an interesting interview. And again, he comes at the questions from not the most predictable angles. And that was a really interesting interview. There's a load of other good ones there. I mean, if you're not in the UK, VPNs are available. And those are and also, if you search for that guy within there, the back catalogue, he's got some amazing stuff he's done in the past. And so I recommend Louis Theroux interviews. there'll be something. I mean, he's interviewed Joan Collins, who's still alive. I'm surprised. Judi Dench,
Yeah, I saw the
Stormzy.
Judi Dench one.
Yeah, so there's a lot there were interesting things. And again, he has a nice way about him when he interviews that are particularly enjoyable. And then
Oh, that
one
looks good.
minor
Seen any
honorable
of his
mention.
stuff?
Mark
So,
Knopfler has just re-recorded Local Hero theme
Mark
and released
Knopfler.
it as a single. And
Wow.
he's got a few mates. They all can play guitars a bit, like Brian May, Eric Clapton, and other folk to contribute to the song. The link's in the chat in the show notes. But the any I think plays and royalties and what go towards a children's charity, cancer a children's cancer charity here in the UK, and highly recommend it. It's really, really quite good. But yeah, he's got so if you can think of anyone particular that plays a guitar that's like vaguely famous, they've all got together with Mark to produce an amazing redo of the Going Home theme from Going I think a song called Going Home from Local Hero. If you don't recognize it, play the first few bars and you will.
So, well, crap. How am I supposed to compete with both of your cool things? It's all right. I don't think that that I'm bringing the same level of quality with my cool thing, but
Don't undercut yourself.
at least it's entertaining and it probably
Okay.
cost a lot to make. And this is a series, mini series, a season, whatever, on Netflix called Three Body Problem.
Oh
Ooh,
yeah. Yeah,
and
I meant to have
I
heard of
didn't
it.
know what to expect out of this. It's 8 episodes, each one is about an hour long, and it's based on a book series that I have not read, so I don't know how it compares to that.
It was written by a guy in China, right?
Yes. And so China definitely plays into this. And the premise is you have it covers multiple decades, and sometimes it jumps back and forth, so that you can see how something from the 1940s plays into what's happening now. And so you have this mystery that involves a bunch of scientists, and in the series description on Netflix, they start to unravel, or they discover an existential threat to essentially to our reality, to all people, and they discover this as certain laws of physics and science stop working right. And I don't want to go deeper into it than that, because I don't want to take away that thrill of surprise when you see for yourself what it is that they're starting to unravel.
And you liked it. It's
I
good.
did.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. It's 8 episodes. I'm assuming that because it's Netflix, it will get a second season, and then they'll leave us on a cliffhanger because it's Netflix.
I did read an interesting article about this. I was considering watching it, and your endorsement helps. About how they tiptoe around things related to China, and how the author had to tiptoe around controversial things like the Cultural Revolution and so on, China.
And yeah, and the Cultural Revolution does play into this, and it's clear they're tiptoeing around parts of it, but there are places where they don't.
So you get the
And
gist of what happened during the Cultural Revolution.
yeah, and there's one scene in one episode where I'm not going to say anything about it because no spoilers, but this scene as it's playing out, and you know the scene is coming because they're telling you this is coming, this is going to happen, And then when it happens, it's like, oh my God, it's really happening. Holy crap. And you're watching this scene play out. And as it plays out, you are engrossed and appalled, and you cannot look away. And
Okay, I'm putting it on my list.
so it's, and I'm not telling you anything about that scene because everyone knows how I feel about spoilers. But wow, there's some really cool, really intense stuff happening in this 8 episodes, and it's a great cast. And you'll as you're watching, you'll be like, good guy or bad guy? Huh. Good guy or bad guy? And which I enjoy.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right, that's great. Thanks for the
Sounds
recommendation. I
cool.
like that
Sure
one.
thing. And if you don't know what a three-body problem is, I mean, you can Google that. And I don't feel like that's a spoiler in and of itself because it's the title of the show. But if you don't, it's okay. They explain to you eventually what a three-body problem is. So you don't need to understand that concept going into the show. So there you go. Three-body problem on Netflix. All right. I still think both of you brought super cool things, and I'm glad that I didn't bring something stupid.
Oh, that was a good recommendation.
Yeah, it's fun. I enjoyed it. Oh, one of the characters in it is played by, and I can't remember the actor's name, and I feel really bad about that because I really like him. In the Marvel Doctor Strange movies, there's Doctor Strange, but then there's the other wizard
Oh, him, yeah.
I believe he's Korean, and I think, I mean, not like he was raised in Korea, but his family heritage, and he's in this. Benedict Wong, there we go. It just popped in my head. He's in this, and I just absolutely love his character. All right. So with that, look at that. We've made it to the end of the show, and somehow we managed to survive in spite of me. So Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me. The best place is on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. Awesome. And Ian, where can people find you when you're not jet setting around?
I'm not just sitting around. LinkedIn is usually the easiest place to find me. My name's Ian Grant. You can forget my
Well
finger right.
done.
There it is.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Yes. I'm there, and that's probably the easiest place to find me. Otherwise, I don't do the socials that much, but I am in our Slack room. If you're on Slack and in the British Tech Slack, I turn up from there.
Awesome.
You can summon me there if you need a question.
Awesome. All right. And let's see. Where can people find me? Social media, J Gamut on basically all of them. I'm posting stuff right now on Mastodon, Instagram, and some on Threads. And then for shows, most Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, then Thursdays on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS, then here on the British Tech Network, Thursday for the Big Show, Fridays for the Mac Show. And then also the Context Machine, Brian Chaffin and I do that show. And I think I hit all the important stuff. So with that, thank you to both of you for making my Thursday afternoon just so much fun. Both of you absolutely rock. And everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the chat, thank you for being here. All of you are absolutely wonderful. And if you watch or listen to the shows later on, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. I really do love that all of you, you're we're all part of this great big Superfund BTN family. Speaking of, Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. Tio Sohos, thank you for being here and supporting us. And give them some online love, people. And speaking of love, the Daily News Show. Kyle does that, and it's 5 minutes. It's all the tech news that you need every morning when you get up. It's just there waiting for you. Check that out. That show does take extra resources to make happen. So please go to the BTN website, click the button to send some money in to help keep that show running, because we need the money for that, and we would hate for that show to die. It almost did once, but all of you made it come back, and so thank you for that. So let's keep it going, so we don't have to have one of those heart-stopping nail-biter moments where we don't know if it's going to keep going. All right, so with that, thank you again to all of you. You're wonderful. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the Mac show. I'm betting we will have stuff to talk about, because it's been kind of Apple-palooza for news recently. And yeah, so there you go. And don't forget to tune in next Thursday for the big show again. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.